What would you do if everyone said they heard your trailer 100 times? You'd probably make a new one. I'm Justin Sales, the host of The Wedding Scammer, The Ringer's first ever true crime pod. We've been hunting a con man for a few weeks now, and our hunt is coming to an end. Schemes, heartbreak, how to put on a wire. We've covered all this and more, but there are still a few surprises left. Binge The Wedding Scammer wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Go beyond reality with new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea and discover a berry delicious world bursting with unexpected blackberry flavor. A world so full of refreshing blackberry iced tea that you may never want to leave. But there's always time to linger. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
All right, Lisa, don't do crystal meth in the bathroom all night long.
That's my opinion!
He will never emotionally fulfill you.
Because I don't want to be a part of this.
Go to sleep! Go to sleep!
Close your legs to married men, trash box.
I'll tell you how I'm doing. Not well, bitch.
Who gonna check me, boo?
Welcome to Morally Corrupt, a show here on the Ringer Reality Feed. She's Jody Walker. I'm Rachel Lindsay. And let's get into it, Jody. We got a jam-packed show today. Not really a lot of news of the week. I think we'll kind of sprinkle it. Little things that we've heard throughout these recaps. But I do want to give you guys a bit of a reminder that we've officially split Morally Corrupt. And I just want to say that that's always good news. Because what that means is that we have an overflow of Bravo shows to cover, which means we're in a beautiful time. We're in our prime. So we like to say. So we have two podcasts. You know how we do it. So we have the podcast that obviously comes out today that you are listening to now. And then we have the other podcast that comes out on Tuesdays. So on Tuesdays, Chelsea and Zach will break down Southern Charm in Miami. Because if you're listening to this, we don't want you to think that we're neglecting those shows. We could never. I mean, you know, we watch everything here. I was about to say except Below Deck, but Jody Walker has that covered.
How dare you, Rachel? How dare you?
All by herself, she's got that one covered. I feel like one day I'll turn a corner.
Do they let
on
me
it.
Talk about it? No, they do not. But I do watch it. So if anybody ever wants to talk to me about it, feel free.
Exactly. Which we like to let you know that there, no stone is left unturned here at Morally Corrupt. But today we're going to be covering Salt Lake City. We're going to cover Beverly Hills. I'm going to do that with Jody. And then Callie is going to join us for Potomac. So let's get into these recaps. Let's start with Salt Lake City, which... I said we were going to sprinkle news of the week in. I'm so excited for Salt Lake City, and I know you are too, but specifically because we have this piece of information that has been coming out about Monica. We've got that clip from the trailer that we've seen. I guess it's the mid-season trailer. We saw it before, and we were like, what is Heather talking about? Who is Heather on the phone with? I mean, honestly, I don't know how you felt, but before we knew anything, I thought she was talking about Jin Shah. We now know she's not. I was like, oh, what did Jin do? What did Jin Shay say? Did she find out? Like, that's what you normally, or, you know, logically would assume. We now are hearing that it has to do with Monica, but we're getting like these pieces, you know, sprinkled in. And I'm so excited for Salt Lake City and what's to come. And that's not even what this episode is about, but that has kind of been dropping through the week. Our ladies at, I assume it's women, I actually don't know. I should say our people at Queens of Bravo have been covering it like crazy. We're big fans of them. Okay, so let's get into the details of, sorry, I had to take a little detour because I was thinking about that. I'm like, oh, that stuff was kind of coming out. I can't remember if we covered it last week or not. So much happens in 1 week in Bravoland. Okay, so we start off this episode with Whitney kind of confronting, kind of, because she doesn't go hard, but talking to Lisa about her wild behavior at her Prism jewelry event. And in true Lisa fashion, she deflects. I mean, it's like she has a fly swatter in her hand, and every word that Whitney is saying, she's just batting away. Like, don't you dare put that on me. This has nothing to do with me. She's got an excuse for every. It's exhausting to the point where I'm sure Whitney was probably like, was I wrong?
Which is kind of what everyone is saying to her, right? Is like, it's the main problem here is just that it's really hard to talk to you. Like, that's kind of what Angie is saying later, too. It's like, I know that it's going to be impossible to talk to you, so I just don't want to do it. It's really incredible how Lisa will enter a conversation like that with Whitney, knowing full well that she ruined her sound bath, and act like absolutely shocked that Whitney is like upset and wants an apology.
Yeah, and no, she absolutely will.
I do feel, I mean, she did say she was sorry, but it was so like, she talks so fast. She literally talks so fast that you can't tell what she's saying. Like, you can't touch down on anything.
This is true. I'm like over it. I'm like, the jig is up. Stop that. Stop it immediately. I need somebody to just go in. Where's Mary Cosby when you need her? I need somebody to go in and tell Lisa to enough. Stop. Because she's so defensive.
That person is not Whitney. That person is not Whitney.
It's not Whitney. And she's so defensive that it's offensive. Like, that's how I'm like, I'm offended by the things that you're saying. It's too much. I do have to pick a bone to pick with Whitney, because as Whitney is preparing for Lisa to enter her home, she's preparing a charcuterie board.
Mm-hmm.
I was deeply offended and bothered that she took the grapes out the package and did not wash them before she put them on the charcuterie board. And this is, okay, this is a big thing in the Black community. And I'm curious if it is for you, Jody. There's a thing about like not wanting to eat other people's food in the Black community.
Whose food, Rachel?
Just other people's. No. It's like no particular race, ethnicity. It is other people's food. It's like, because for concerns, just as I pointed out with Whitney, I don't know how you prepare your meat. I don't know if you wash certain things. I don't know if things fell on the floor. I don't know how you cook them. It's really deeply rooted in the community where we're like, I don't know if I trust other people's cooking. And in this case, I don't trust the preparation of how Whitney put that charcuterie board. Those grapes were ashy. There was nothing wet on them.
Well, I was going to say, you would be able to tell that those grapes were unwashed. You wouldn't even have to ask the question because they were powder white. They just went. No, she could have washed them as soon as she got them. I never want to give Whitney any credit. But
and put them in the bag? I don't believe in that either.
Were they in a bag?
They were in the plastic. She took them out the plastic bag. Okay. I rewound it. Okay. She put them
You know I support taking any stand against Whitney for little to no reason.
It is.
So that's totally fine by me.
I was mortified. And I said, well, Black people aren't suspicious. Case in point, right here. You know, you just don't know how people prepare their food. That's why you always have to say grace.
If Whitney had a cat, she would let the cat on the counter. I do know that. So I wouldn't really want to be eating off that charcuterie board either.
That too. And I don't think
Lisa was housing it. Like, she was going absolutely nuts on this charcuterie. I actually really liked it because she was eating all episode. And especially, all they eat in fucking Salt Lake City is charcuterie. They are never not making a charcuterie board for someone to come over. And Lisa Barlow is eating it every time. Except when they go to Lisa Barlow's house and she's like, here, I got 3 muffins from Sam's and 4 croissants. Like, She and going in on food. Them,
which is how, like, a full circle moment, right? The episode starts with Lisa eating the charcuterie, and it ends with her going in on that muffin.
And so, you can actually feel safe about Lisa Barlow's food because it was all packaged somewhere else. And, like, none of it needs to be washed. It's, like, incredibly processed. It's fine.
Which I appreciate.
Third party verified.
Speaking of... Oh, well, Whitney also thinks that Lisa is triggered by Angie being friendly with Monica. And to that, I say, duh.
Whitney was really proud of her pop psychology that she was performing.
Yeah, it's like, you think, Whitney? Good job. Like, even the strangers in the room who don't know the names of Angie, Lisa, and Monica could figure out what was happening in that moment. I think this is going to be a storyline,
though,
throughout.
Yeah, I know this conversation is, like, supposed to reflect poorly on Lisa, and it does, but all the funniest things are happening with Whitney, like when Whitney, you know, kindly requests that Lisa not say the F word over and over and over again in her house where her kids are, but Whitney just, like, can't stop. She just keeps saying it and explaining that, like, they're going to think that we're arguing and they're not used to this, and I don't talk like this in the house. I talk, and Lisa's just kind of, like, stuffing unwashed grapes in her mouth, being like, okay, yeah, no, we got it. Can we get back to fighting, please?
It was so odd. It's like, your kids, I mean, we just saw Bobby turn 13. They're not 4 and 5. You don't think the 13-year-olds at school are using the F word? Come on.
I kind of felt like she was trying to make it a moment.
Yeah, she was. I mean, like, your husband lost his job because of the way that you guys, and I know you're adults, but, you know, like, you don't think Bobby's friends talk about that at school? You don't think Bobby's sneaking in some episodes here? Like, come on. Come on. She got a golf cart.
She got a golf cart. She's of karting age. She's okay.
Exactly. Bobby is fine. This is light work, as they were subjected to Mary describing a human body being ejected out the top of a car. And then her saying they didn't survive. So
that's a really good point, Rachel. It's a really good point, but it's also makes me think, okay, maybe Whitney is, like, a little more aware of what's being said in her house after she thought she was inviting a pastor into her home. And then that pastor just talked about, like, manslaughter the whole time.
Let's get into that pastor. So Pastor Mary, you must have been thrilled at this, because she invites Heather over for a house tour. And I know how much you are intrigued by Mary's house.
The thing about this intrigue is that it comes with no end, because there are no answers. It's like looking at the house more doesn't solve anything. It just gives me more questions. It's the chairs, the backs of the chairs grow in height every time we see them. But that Fellowship Hall green carpet in the living room never changes. That is as consistent as the day is long. You know those little foil-wrapped candies have been in those jars since she moved into that house.
She modeled it after a church.
Full of poison.
You know, now that you talk about the backs of the chairs, those are like pulpit chairs. You're right. Like, yeah, she's probably taking things from the church and just implementing into her house. She's probably holding church at this point in the house. Come as you are.
That's what I miss about her being a full character, though, is seeing the weird stuff that she got up to. Like, every morning, she and Robert Sr. unwrapping those hospital trays with plastic saran wrap all over everything. I was about to say that you could eat safely at Mary's house because of the way that it seems like it's been prepared, but I still stand by that. Like, I think she's probably slowly poisoning Robert Sr. Like, something's up. Like, something's up with all that food.
It's so funny. First,
that's why you went to Vegas.
Somebody needs to do a wellness check on Robert Sr. Like, I was thinking about that this episode. Like, we keep referencing him. It's like her son's wife. We're referencing them, but we don't see. Where are they?
In that house? Do they need to not be saying the F word in front of 22-year-old live-in children in that house?
Like, where are these people? It's just Mary. Mary sitting in that fellowship hall all by herself. Okay, so Mary and Heather talk about the things that Heather wrote in this book. And I don't know about you, Jody, but I was shocked that Mary read any of Heather's book. Mary seems totally aloof She doesn't want to be involved in what the women have going on and what they're doing. So the fact that she actually picked up that book, turned the pages, and found herself within them is shocking to me. But she did. And she is offended by the things that Heather said, which it seems to be only a paragraph and a half.
And it is incredibly gracious towards Mary.
Yeah. Yeah. She really could have gone in. And funny. And funny. Like,
yes,
the way she described it, I was like, if I didn't watch the show, I'd say, well, who is this Mary individual? And I'd like to get to know her a little bit more. She sounds funny.
It's very well written. And I'll say that about Heather's book. You know, I read Heather's book to interview her on the podcast. And it's so funny the way that all of these women are like, guess we're going to have to read our sections now. Like, read a damn book. This is literally like written by someone you know. It could not be more interesting to you. It's about a city that you live in and you are in it. Like, you can read the whole book. Mary does seem to be the only one at this point who's even read the section about herself,
exactly.
Which again, you do point out, is a paragraph. Is she? I'm gonna read what Heather wrote because it's so fine. She says, Mary was equal parts elusive and forthcoming, engaging and disinterested. I agreed with anything and everything she said. And when she corrected my pronunciation, my grammar, my diet, and my physical appearance, I hung my head in shame and thanked her, which is so accurate of how season one went down,
yeah.
Like with Heather. And like,
yeah.
You know, Heather was very appeasing towards others in season one, especially Mary, who she's still appeasing towards. She's clearly terrified of her.
Yeah.
And, you know.
She's playing it right.
I like seeing that old dynamic.
Yeah.
It's funny.
She's playing it the way that she should. But, like, let's be honest. Mary, if Mary was mad that she was in the book, she could have said, and Mary was there. And she would have had a fit. She could have said, Mary had a little lamb. Joseph and Mary, you know, took Jesus.
And she would
say,
I didn't. I had a little sheep and you lied. Yeah. That's what she's saying, is that Heather lied. And Heather, in the moment of the episode, kindly points out that Mary has also said some unkind things about her. And in a Sutton moment, which we'll get to, Mary says, name them. And Heather's like, well, you said that I look inbred. Do you really think that I look inbred? And Mary says, well, yes. It's what lives in Mary's head that she thinks that she can ask Heather to apologize for saying that she is equal parts elusive and forthcoming when Mary is openly and often saying that she looks inbred.
Listen,
is insane.
That moment, I do.
I do. That's what she said.
There was not one beat taken in between Heather's question and Mary's answer. Mary, do you think I look inbred? I do.
And she smiled.
And I thought to myself, and then she like doubles down on it, right? So this is the second time that she's told Heather that she looks inbred. And then she seems to like not understand what
she
inbred.
She said, did that bother you?
Yeah. So
she like, said, I'm sorry, did that bother you?
I wish Heather would have said, do you like, what's your definition of inbred? Because Heather's like, I think it means like there's that you're saying I'm ugly, which it's deeper than that. Right? It's not just ugly. But Mary, I don't think she understands what inbred means. So then I was like, not as upset. I was like, I don't know if she knows what that means.
Oh, she knows. She knows what it means. Because like, it's an insult about her being Mormon. Like, because when she originally says it, she's like, oh, she's got that Mormon attitude. She doesn't even know she looks inbred. The nerve of Mary Cosby, who married her step-grandfather and had a child with him.
No blood.
To call. It's as close as you can get without it to call someone inbred.
It's true.
It's unreal. She's all nerve. She's all nerve and green carpet. She's an unbelievable person. She's an alien.
She truly is. Somebody took over her body. Somebody did. But I am enjoying.
She is being controlled with pulleys and levers inside of her by something.
And I'm enjoying the show. I truly am enjoying the show.
It was a good Mary day. It was a good Mary day for me. I have good and bad Mary days. And this one, I was glad to have her there.
Oh my gosh. I found myself for the rest of the day saying, I do. somebody asks me something, I do. Any moment I could say, I do. Okay. So we go from one intriguing person to another, an enigma, I should say. And that is Monica's mom. So Monica's mom decides to return the car and they have this brief encounter. And I will say the most troubling thing to me about that scene were the mom's pigtails.
I was like, oh no, she's going to say something actually emotional. And I was hands down, I was troubled by the entire look. She is wearing a pair of Burberry print, I think pajama pants. If they're not pajama pants, they're like some sort of unknowable style. A polo by Ralph Lauren, but it's like, I think it's that like polo association that you get at like Ross Dress for Less. Zip up jacket with a Burberry scarf wrapped around her neck and inexplicable pigtails.
Well, you know what it was? You know what? I couldn't get past the pigtails. So thank you for that very detailed description because I didn't even know what she was wearing. And I'll tell you why.
Are you serious?
Yes.
It was so crazy.
The moment I saw the pigtails, I thought this woman is extremely manipulative because it wasn't giving Marge from Jersey pigtails, right? Like Marge would acknowledge that she was wearing pigtails. She would say it was her thing. It was kind of like a quirky thing. I'm different. I wear pigtails, whatever. Monica's mother was doing it to portray innocence. She wanted to come off as childlike. She wanted to seem like, you know, like this little girl. And I thought, wow, this woman is next level manipulative. And I couldn't stop thinking about it the entire time they were having that conversation where Monica wouldn't even let her mother enter the home and met her in the driveway. I couldn't get over the scene.
It's like what is happening between these two is a case study. It is that woman has such a dark energy. And so to see her slap on a pair of thin pigtails is like especially startling. It's not just any woman wearing pigtails. It is like this dark-sided woman.
Thin. You said thin.
They were small. They were very small.
They were piggy tails. They were piggies. They were piggy tails. Yeah, you called it from day one, the moment we saw them all go to that assisted living or nursing home with the grandmother. You called, like, there is something deeply dark between that, where it's almost like it's interesting to talk about, but it also feels very wrong. Like, we shouldn't be watching this happen because we're only getting a snippet of it. You know, it is so much worse. We're scratching the surface. The children know. The five-year-old knows.
Oh, that was what was, like, really... And you know, we're seeing a performance from both sides. It's
absolutely
like, obviously, this mom is putting on... And her being, like... Her, so valiantly being, like, Monica, we have got to go to therapy. The cycle of dysfunction in our family goes back generations, and we can be the ones to break it. And Monica's like, Mom, you just stole my car.
Right. She's like, Mom, we've been going to therapy. The mom said it like, this is something new. This will fix us. And she's like, we've been going for years.
And like, be the ones to break it is, I don't know. Yeah, man, keep trying. But like, we're pretty late in life here on YouTube. Like, might not have to be the next generation that kind of really combs through this. But to see the way that her daughters reacted when the grandmother got there, yeah, just made me really nervous. Because it's like, they have a lot of insight into this, too much for kids. But, you know, can you keep it from them? Probably not. And then like the way that the older ones have to take care of the younger ones, they're like, should we lock the door? Like, it was just, that was tough. And you're right, we shouldn't be watching it, but I am on the edge of my seat watching it.
Totally. And that's the thing too. It's like Monica keeps saying, I want to show my children something different. I don't want my children to be subjected to the same things that I did growing up, but you include them in, like, especially the oldest one, you include them on the issues with your mom. So it's like they see it. Children are very perceptive. They see it. So I don't know, for those children's sake, I just hope that like they figure it out or they just separate and start anew. Okay. We talked about Heather kind of cozying up to Mary and just kind of letting Mary's the dominant. She's the submissive. It's very much so like, I'm just trying to keep the peace. I'm just trying to get along. But when I watch Lisa and Heather together, I feel like Heather's now doing that with Lisa. We also saw Heather do that with Jen Shaw. I feel like she's so desperately, maybe desperately is too strong, but she really wants to have this friendship and be accepted by Lisa. We've seen, and you pointed it out last week's episode, we've seen their troubled past and they've known each other the longest. They went to school together. Or college together. She went to high school with Angie, college with Lisa. And there seems to be this deep desire to be accepted by Lisa. And I just see Heather really trying over going like beyond to be Lisa's friend. Are you getting that? It's just, and maybe it was, maybe the rap, the Away in a Manger rap put me over the edge. It's like giving Lisa any opportunity to have all the attention on her, front and center, just really catering to her in a way that I don't care to see.
Well, I didn't take the rap that way because the entire production and her singing and then rapping was so deeply embarrassing for Lisa. And I think she actually even felt embarrassed by it. Like, you see her face is like stone when she walks away from the rap because there was not a good response to it. This was not a Watch What Happens Live audience. This was like a real audience and they were not interested. And so I think she was really embarrassed. And I was like, wow, I can't believe that she did that for Heather. Like that, it was just, it was, I kind of felt like Lisa was also deferring to Heather a bit, you know, like she did the opening for her. It was about being a bad Mormon and like Lisa is Mormon. What I'm getting more from Heather right now, which is talked about a little bit elsewhere in the episode, is that she's just doing the easiest thing, which is like, I think what Heather does a lot and then it comes back to bite her is like she doesn't want to have to deal with something. So she just does the, which I do this too. She just does the easiest thing until it blows up in her face. Mm-hmm, and But I actually am always really fascinated by Lisa and Heather's dynamic because it's so deeply rooted and they could work together, but they so often just can't. So I'm kind of like, okay. But then there's also the meta aspect that they are the anchors of the show. Yeah. I mean, I guess Whitney's been there since the beginning too, but it's and Meredith, but like they're not anchors. It's like Whitney and Heather are what bind this show and this group of people together. And if they like fundamentally can't get along, then what happens to the show? And it's very important to them.
That's actually a really good point. I mean, you are so well, like you could write a thesis on the relationship with Lisa and Heather, and I love it. And every time you talk, I'm like, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. I see it. I see it just as you do. Just as you do.
Angie, which makes me think of, I'm pretty sure that when I interviewed Lisa Barlow, I said something crazy like it's, I'm so fascinated by you guys because you're kind of like the foundational wound of Salt Lake City. And she blinked her eyes at me so big, like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, you don't see that? That's not, you're not observing that. You don't see that.
No, she's like, I'm just, did somebody say Vita Tequila? Like, that's all that she heard. Angie, I'm not going to spend much on this, but Angie's just trying to have a moment on the show because she really didn't. So she confronts Meredith, who Meredith wants nothing to do with her. And I don't see that relationship going anywhere. Like, every time Angie tries to come up and talk to Meredith, I'm like, please don't. Just let it go. Meredith wants nothing to do with you. It's, try somebody else. Go talk to
Lisa. Yeah, Angie just has to let it go. Because like last week we were like, do we like Angie? How was it? It's just something about between Angie and Meredith is like, it's just a non-starter. Meredith is almost becoming like Mary, where you just have to seclude her somewhere else to be able to watch her. And I got to say, I did think it was pretty funny watching her try to do that podcast. I also liked the podcast producer representation for producer Devin. I was like, Devin, do you see yourself in Antonio?
I was like, producer Devin would never. Okay, they like, so you guys, they're recording and they're having this extremely intimate moment, which I was kind of like, okay, this is weird for podcasting. Podcasting,
well, I was like, what is this podcast
case
about?
In point, this is a prime example that everybody can't do a podcast. Like, and maybe they've come along, like maybe that was the first one and they've improved since. So I don't want to like harp on it too much, but everybody, you can't just pick up a microphone and start talking, right? Like you have to be able to engage with your co-host and an audience. There has to be a format, an outline, a plan. They were just talking. It was like a therapy session. They were just talking to each other.
On a physical level, they are sitting on their couch and leaning towards microphones on the coffee table. I was like, you guys are going to ruin your pelvic floor. Like, you got to take care of yourself. You got to sit in a chair. You got to have your microphone in a stand.
Yes, it was so weird. Producer Devin points out that Seth was eating while he was recording. I have to admit, I do that as well sometimes.
No, you do not.
During higher learning, sometimes it's the first time that I've eaten throughout the day. Now, since we've moved up recording time, I no longer have that as an issue. But it used to be one. So I am guilty of that. But it's wrong. And the listeners complain. Every single time.
I was going to say, and Seth will learn when he gets reviews that it is not appreciated.
Every single time. But they're having this intimate moment where they're talking about their marriage and how they lost their way and found their way back to each other. And then Seth looks over at the computer and realizes that they're recording. And this is what I'm referring to about producer Devin. She would never, before we start every podcast, it's check your levels. Is everybody recording? Let's go. The fact that that producer did not know they were recording, was it Brooks? Was Brooks the producer?
Was Brooks Antonio in a mask? They should have Brooks be the producer. Like he would, I actually think Brooks would never let that happen. It was, and also I do feel like probably as a producer, because I do this sometimes just recording, if something's getting really good, like I do, when I'm doing an interview for a piece and I'm recording it, like, if something's getting really good, my eyes flicker over to make sure it's recording. Because, like, that's what you're like, I have to have this. I have to have this tape. And Seth is crying, Meredith is crying, and they got nothing.
Well, thank God it was captured on camera. Maybe they have the audio.
God.
Maybe they have the audio. They were mic'd. Maybe they have the audio.
They were mic'd.
Okay, so the episode ends with Lisa coming over to Angie coming over to Lisa's. Angie comes over to Lisa's. They want to talk about Monica because Lisa's just highly upset that they have this friendship and she doesn't understand it because she feels like, you know, Angie, I guess, was talking a lot about her and she doesn't understand how they could be friends. And yeah, so I mean, that's how it ends. It was a boring way to end the episode because we weren't really getting anywhere. I don't know if you got anything out of that conversation. I mean,
it's Lisa's very defensive about making sure that people know. And by people, I do mean the audience, like that we know that she's not mad at Angie because she's being friendly with Monica. She doesn't care who anyone is friends with. That's what she's always saying, because that's like what happened with Meredith or whatever. It's like, no, you can be friends with whoever you want. I don't care. You can be friends with whoever you want. You lied to me about it. Like, and Monica and Angie is basically like, well, in between you and I having a conversation, Monica and I had a conversation. It went really well.
Yeah.
We ate cake and we were really nice to each other. And so now I'm fine with her. It's just, Lisa's been freaking out. There's something in retrograde or something while these shows are being filmed, because also in Beverly Hills, people are just freaking out.
Yeah.
Everyone's acting nuts.
Well, for Lisa, I believe it's because, you know, what's her son? Jack. Jack has decided to take a mission and now we know he's going to Colombia, which you have information. It's rumored that he is not in Colombia, actually. So Lisa must be over the moon.
Well, he has been spotted in a TJ Maxx, in a TJ Maxx Home Goods combo, wearing his little badge and his little outfit to be a Mormon missionary. And it is not a TJ Maxx in Colombia. It is in Irvine, California, I guess. So he does seem to be still serving his mission, but he does not seem to be in Colombia.
Interesting. We'll have to... We're not sure why. If we find out more, we will report back. Okay, well, that is enough for Salt Lake City. Let's move on to Beverly Hills, since something is going on in Beverly Hills, too.
Something's in the air. Something's going on.
Well, they are in Vegas and something does go on in Vegas. And I was watching Watch What Happens Live with Maren Morris and Sutton. And the way Maren Morris described Vegas, I was like, that's absolutely it. It's like exhausting. You're all dried up. Like it's not the summer here for the women, but there's just something that exhausts you about Vegas, whether you don't even have to be up late at night. I don't know what it is.
They pump all that oxygen into the casinos and then your body gets used to it. And then once you lose it, it's like everything's artificial and you never see the sunlight.
You never see the sunlight. That is so true. That's what it is. So we're still in Vegas. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but this episode starts off with the ladies all separating for different lunches, which I liked this. I liked that two by two, just as they went into the Ark, these women separated and you have Erica and Crystal who go to lunch and have a separate conversation. Cause I like this. Like we're getting different storylines. Dorit and Kyle go to lunch and then Garcelle and Sutton go to lunch. Well, they hang out and then they go to lunch with Oliver where I'm just like, stop trying to make Oliver happen. Unless we're getting
not going to happen.
Unless we're getting Vanderpump Vegas, like we didn't need a scene where Oliver is explaining once again that he was separated from his wife. I don't care. I'm over that whole situation. Like it was a thing until the scandal. We've moved on. There were bigger fish to fry when it came to that drama, and we fried it so many times. I'm done with that. So Erica and Crystal go to lunch. They have nothing to talk about. That was interesting. They really don't.
They don't. I did think they both looked so beautiful. I was just like, wow, they look amazing. Their skin is so clear. And that was it. I mean, it was kind of funny that Crystal was basically just like, God, so like, does your life just suck now? Like, or did it suck more before? They both of your lives seem like they suck. Like, which one's worse and would you go back?
I was like, who put these two together? Like, they were leftovers.
They were
like,
just the leftovers.
All they can do is talk about the night before. They really don't have a relationship, but it is what it is. Okay, so Kyle and Dorit are sitting down and having a much more intimate conversation because they are actually friends. And I have to say, I'm actually, the word is not enjoying, but I'm a little surprised and I actually appreciate the fact that we are seeing how the relationship between Kyle and Mauricio is breaking down because we know the separation happened after they finished filming. And so it was like, oh, we're not going to get any of it. You know, they're going to come back and try to make it a thing. But we are actually, I don't know if I want to jump to understanding, but seeing how the pieces are, or things are falling apart. So Kyle is talking to Dorit and Dorit is basically, you know, questioning her about the relationship. And Kyle's like, and I never thought of it this way. She's like, listen, I'm sober. I've been sober for over a year. The way I'm navigating life, it's just different. I'm focused on different things. Mo is focused on his work. He drinks a lot. He has to go out and entertain. And they just seem to be moving in completely different ways. And I never realized that. I forget Kyle's sober, but I didn't realize that the sober lifestyle is really at odds with what Mo is having to do for work. And it's interesting because this is also why you're able to afford the lifestyle that you want. So it's to hear Kyle say, well, I'd rather just live in the mountains and be away from people. It's like you've changed, but he's still kind of on the same path that you guys were on, have always been on these 20 plus years.
And it's a tough place to be. Like, I think that's a very common story in a couple, you know, like one person just kind of gets to a point where they're ready to make a change that they've probably wanted to make for a long time. And like for her, it's like, it's not just being sober. It's like a lot of stuff is going on. I mean, the way she keeps telling everybody else that they seem like they're going through something, it's like Kyle is going through something. I don't totally know what it is, but like, you know, she's given up alcohol. She's obviously like extremely focused on like her body and what goes into it. She's, I think, like dressing really differently. She's acting differently. She's kind of like rebelling, you know, like she is just going through a midlife something. And to be the other person on the other side of it, who didn't think they needed a change and who thought everything was fine. And then that was what I was referencing, as we hear Mauricio very briefly say to PK, like that he basically just does the easiest thing. And the easiest thing is like, the wife is always right. And that's not working anymore. Like something's not working. And so I don't know that we're like you said, we're not understanding what's happening necessarily, but it does seem real. Like it does seem like
real issues,
you know. Yeah, I think we were all kind of like, oh, like usual, Kyle's going to be kind of manipulating this behind the scenes, showing us whatever she wants us to see so that that plays into whatever happens. I'm sure she's doing that to an extent, but like she can't hide the way that the tears start coming out of her eyes when Dorit is like, well, if all of this is going on, how do you sustain a marriage? Like, are you ever worried that this isn't going to last? She starts crying in a way that is like, it's like those silent, like you can't stem them kind of tears. She's just really emotional. And that's kind of the answer, you
yeah.
know?
It was very real. And then even to see her later trying to have a conversation with Mauricio and like they had
so stunted
nothing. She was like, can you give me the girl version? And I was like, and he seems very distracted and focused on work. And it's again, I go back, it's tough because they obviously have had these dreams for their family. He's built this very successful company and he wants to continue to build it. And that's usually how it is. I mean, there's so many blood, sweat, and tears when you're building a business. And as it becomes more successful, the more those blood, sweat, and tears come out of it until he sells it or, you know, another person takes over. I mean, they're international at this point. So he's only going to continue going in this direction. And I think with her, you know, she's always been a very proud mother. I mean, still is. But even though the girls are still living at home, which is interesting, they're grown. They have their own lives. She probably rarely sees them. Portia's a teenager now. She's probably preparing for college at this point. So I feel like she feels like her role is changing and she's probably wanting to lean on her partner who's not there because he's building this business, filming for another show.
Mauricio's going to find himself crying on a podcast, sitting on a couch, just like Seth was, saying, I should have been there. I thought I was supposed to be making money, but I should have been there.
Yep. Yep. So we'll, I mean, obviously to date, we know, I mean, Kyle slipped up and said divorce at BravoCon. So I don't know. It doesn't sound like they're working on their separation at all. So that's that. We have three totally different types of conversations. One about nothing, two, very deep. And then three, Sutton and Garcelle's just wacky. So Garcelle decides to take Sutton on a gondola and how do you say it? A gondoliers? I've never seen a gondolier. Okay, yeah. So the guy is, you know, it's the guy on the gondola. He's, you know, moving them along the way in this river. I've never done this in Vegas before. I don't even know what is that in the Venetian? I don't even know where that is.
I don't want to be in that water. I don't like inside water.
But they're trying to have this conversation, which is kind of serious. And it's so funny because the man starts singing. Great voice.
He is singing. I mean, he is going for it.
And Jody, he should have. Let me tell you something.
Gorgeous.
This man, by all day, every day, we'll just say he works all day, every day, moving people around this gondola in dirty water, indoors, not outside, so he doesn't see the light of day, in Italian, in the middle of Vegas. I think he was singing in Italian. In the middle of Vegas, with this beautiful voice. He is a diamond in the rough. He has not been discovered. So you bet your ass that when the cameras were rolling, I too would have said, this is my moment.
Yeah.
He was not going to lose that opportunity. And I am not mad at it.
He said, I can hear that the woman on this boat is talking about how she doesn't trust her friends with the safety of her children. And that's too bad because I got some opera to sing.
Yeah. And I was like, you go. That's exactly what you should be doing. You understood that assignment. You said, this is my moment. And for all we know, he's really on a real gondola in Italy right now. really doing it. Maybe they booked him for something else.
Do you think that that is like the upward trajectory of a gondolier? A fake Vegas gondolier to real.
I like to think so. Or maybe he's on stage somewhere in Vegas, but he is an untapped talent that needs to be discovered.
He'll definitely be at BravoCon next year. We know that much.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine? He's just, they have like a little lazy river that he's just moving. That'd be awesome, actually.
And it's going to be in Vegas. We'll go see him. It might be in Vegas. Because did you see that the waiter not security guard that Meredith like screamed at to get Angie out of the restaurant was at BravoCon and they reconnected?
Yes, he was. It is so in Vegas funny. Next year. Yes, he was. Okay, so the ladies decide to go to dinner in a country bar. They get all dressed up in their gear. I really thought they were going to a Shania Twain concert. They get all dressed up in their gear, go to dinner at the Delano. I didn't even see that Delano. I didn't even see that restaurant when we were there.
Oh, I didn't realize that was where they were.
Yeah, like they flashed to the hotel and I was like, oh, okay. And then they go to Gilly's, which, shocking. Gilly's is in Texas. I did not know that there was a Gilly's. Yes. There's Gilly's in Gilly's, I
didn't look this
started
up, but I was kind of like trying to figure out if it was off the strip or something because those people looked local.
It might be. Oh, yeah. Like speaking of taking their moments, when that guy, you know, they were like, okay, can you show us something on the bull? And the man who works the bull jumps on the back of the bull and starts like standing on it like he's surfing in water and then like riding it backwards. And I was like, okay, this is a moment that I did not need you to understand. We did not need to see all of this. Like, it's like a one trick pony as opposed to real talent like our gondolier. Okay. That was true.
The bull rider is not invited to BravoCon.
That was
Rachel was not impressed.
Does Kyle have an investment in Kemosabe? Because we're getting like a mention a week every episode.
She has to.
And it's like, she pulls out the hat and she's like, real diamonds. And it's like, and I love hats. I am a hat wearer. But enough. Enough.
Enough.
Enough.
Let the mouse go.
Enough. Now, there is something that Garcelle says in her confessional that I was kind of like, She alludes to the fact of Kyle not being as fun when she's sober. And that was a moment where I was like, for whatever reason, Kyle decides to be sober because she thought she drank too much, because for health reasons, because I don't know, she wanted to challenge herself. I didn't even notice Kyle was sober. So I still think she's a lot of fun. I think she's got a fun personality. But just to say that, it was also like, you don't have to drink to have fun. I don't know. I just wanted to point that out.
And then she says something to her when Kyle orders, like she asks for a non-alcoholic beer. They're like, we can make you a mocktail. She's like, yeah, I'll have that. And then Garcelle is like, how long is this going to go on? Like, she's being a little snotty about it. It's just one of those things. Don't ask people about their bodies. Don't ask them why they're, or like, just let people not drink, you know?
Yeah.
Just,
yeah. Agreed. Okay. So they go to Gilly's. Gilly's is a fun place, but these ladies didn't seem to enjoy it that much because only two of them got on the bull. Sun got on for 15 seconds. It's like, why are we at Gilly's?
A nervous wreck about it.
Why are we at Gilly's? You go to ride the bull, you go to line dance, like, don't just dress the honky-tonk. Live the honky-tonk life. Immerse yourself into the experience. Whatever. Okay, so then the ladies finally leave Vegas. They go to the airport to catch their PJ, their private jet. They run into, on the way, as they're leaving. And I'm curious, do you think this was planned? Are they controlling the elevators? Like, that's tough. That's tough to have planned that perfectly. I don't think this was planned. But as they're waiting for their elevator, they're all standing there. The doors open. It's some of the Magic Mike dancers who are Erica's friends. Erica, we know she gave up arguing for Lamp, but she did not give calling people out and putting them on the spot, which she does with Sutton to apologize to them because she basically says, Sutton said your show was shitty or something like that. She spirals after this. That, like, she completely spirals, gets upset. She's on the Sprinter van. She's feeling bad. She's embarrassed. She's crying. She's all the things. And all the women are trying to comfort her in their different ways. And nothing seems to settle her down. She's just, she's too far gone at this point. You're squinting your eyes. You're shaking your head. You don't quite think. You use the word serendipitous. You don't think that it was a coincidence.
Well, you're right. It would be so hard to plan it. Yeah, because they're not controlling the elevators. Elevators in those hotels in Vegas move so fast. Like, that I don't think that Mikey... I wouldn't put anything past Mikey, but Mikey and Erica trying to coordinate him being like, okay, we're on the 12th floor and we're coming down. Also, Mikey's not staying on a higher floor than Erica. So why were they coming down? I don't know. I have questions. The thing that seemed most suspicious to me was how quickly Erica reacted. Like, the doors open and then everyone's like, oh, Davis, because like they know him. He's Mikey's boyfriend. And I guess Mikey is in there. There's like a very funny Chiron where it's like, also in the elevator, Mikey, but we can't see him.
You just made me think of something. They were on the ground floor because they had that pool, right? Weren't they on the ground floor? Maybe they weren't. I'm trying to think when Dorit was outside talking to PK on the phone, and she's like, this is our backyard. But I can't remember if they were looking at the top of buildings or we didn't. I don't know. But now that I'm thinking, I'm like, they're on the ground floor. So why were they getting on the elevator? Why were they filming them at the elevator? Now I'm suspicious.
There were some suspicious things happening. Like, the cameras were so ready.
They could control the elevator.
You can.
So now I'm like, why were the... We have never seen ladies, to my knowledge, leave in that way from a trip.
Like, yeah. And then they were all going to pile on an elevator. I don't know. In some ways,
yeah,
it seemed totally normal. They were just hanging around. But in other ways... But either way, it creates this confrontation. And I actually thought the people involved in the confrontation, Davis and Sutton, handled it pretty well in the moment. I thought Davis was quite generous to just be like, yeah, you guys should come again and catch the end. Like, it's a good show.
He said it gets artistic.
It gets quite artful.
Artful.
And Sutton was like, I know, I'm sorry I missed that. I was like, I don't know what is going on with Sutton, but she was at least like in that moment, you know, kind of like, I overreacted. It was just this thing. But then, yeah, she goes on the van. She cries. Everyone kind of lets it go. Erica's back to her Linton promise. She is back to not fighting once they're in the van. And then back in Beverly Hills, Kyle shows up at Sutton's house unannounced. That's what Sutton says and it really does seem like at that moment, the cameras are kind of getting in place. They weren't already in there. When you hear Sutton opening the door and saying, did you just come to my house unannounced? We can't see her. So like that suggests to me that this actually is a surprise. And Sutton is hammered. It's just extremely clear that she's drunk.
Is she? Oh my gosh, Jody, I didn't even pay attention to that. Maybe I was listening and I wasn't looking at the camera because I didn't even catch that she said it wasn't planned. All I remember is the B-roll of everybody walking around in the rain. And I was like, enough, this is enough. And Kyle showing up and being like, it's, you know, torrential out there, whatever it is that she says. And I'm like, what's going on? Yeah, like she just shows up. So I must have been distracted towards the end. I was like, let's get to the part that we've seen on the previews leading up to this episode. So, wow, I did not get that she was hammered.
You know, there's that small, I think they're at least trying to suggest that. And then to me, it totally seemed like she was. But there's also the earlier clip where she pours herself what I would call a quadruple. I mean, a stiff, stiff pour of vodka. It's like, there's such a recognizable rich person drunk around what is happening. Like when she opens this cabinet and it's full of the exact drink that she drinks, that there are like three handles of Kettle One, three giant bottles of grapefruit juice in there. And she gets out one of those plastic cups. It's like the kind of cup you get at the Masters. It's like this very specific kind of cup that like rich alcoholic Southern people like
exactly
to use to pour. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
She pours 4 inches of vodka in it and then grapefruit juice. And the editors show us that it's 1 p.m. So like a narrative is being told here. It's not. And I guess it's on the same day. Yeah. So then Kyle arrives, I guess. And I guess we're supposed to kind of think like, who knows how many of these stiff pours she's had at this point. And then Kyle asks for tea or hot chocolate. And she says, I'm having a cocktail. And she's so mean to that assistant. Something's going on. She sound like Kyle, but something's going on.
And I feel like he popped up out of nowhere because it was always the other guy that we used to always see. And I'm like, I don't ever remember seeing
like a
Avi.
Young guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's new.
I don't. And she must be upset that the other guy, I want to call him Josh for some reason, is no longer there. Yeah. So interesting. Now I want to go back and watch that clip because I definitely didn't catch all of that. And I will. So this is where we see Kyle talking to Sutton and basically telling her she has a habit of losing her shit in ridiculous circumstances, which I love the way that she phrases that. And this is where we get the famous name 'em.
Name 'em. I couldn't believe how many times she said it.
Because she thought it was cute.
It would have also made me crazy. Like, I probably would have reacted like Kyle. It's like, well, shut the fuck up and let me.
Yeah. No, she she
but
thought
Kyle
that
is
was
also,
so cute.
Kyle, to use her own word, is also wildly rude. I mean, Kyle's very rude very often. Like, she comes into Sutton's house unannounced and then goes, and by the way, fuck you for that. She treats Sutton like a sister. There's something about Sutton that, like, really makes her act the way that she acts with her sisters. They're just, like, calling each other bitches, saying fuck you. And yeah, they have like such a strange relationship. And then the name 'em. And, you know, to Kyle's credit, once Sutton finally gives her a breath, she does name 'em. Ugly Leather Pants Day when she didn't have a present for Garcelle. Face Roller Time when she was racist and Crystal called her out on it. And this time in Las Vegas. Those are the times she named 'em.
No, she definitely named him. And I don't know if I would have been able to name him on the spot, but she did, which means, and you know, she's forgetting some, right?
Uh-huh.
But,
yeah.
Which it's so interesting that you talk about the diet. I know we're going to move on to Potomac, guys. There's just so much to cover. But it is interesting the way that she talks about, or the way she treats Sutton, and Sutton is starting to recognize it because Sutton does make that comment in her confessional where she's like, I don't think she's ever had my back. She's not a friend to me. And I actually enjoy seeing the two of them together because they don't always get along. And it is like that relationship, the sister relationship, which is maybe familiar to me having sisters. But yeah, that's the show ends on a TBD with the name 'em. And the look on Sutton's face when Kyle yells at her, she's so taken aback. Like, what? I just asked you to name them. So good.
I want you to go back and look at those eyes when she makes that face are going to see 4 inches of Kettle One in them.
I'm definitely going to go watch back. Only question I have is when Kyle showed up, did she show up with the cameras or were the cameras already in Sutton's house?
I think that Kyle showed up with the cameras and they came inside Sutton's house to get her arriving. Because also Sutton's like, I was watching this too carefully, but like her makeup looks way different than it ever does. Like she looks different. She doesn't have like on screen makeup on. She has just makeup on.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But I'm not totally sure.
I will report back after I watch
it. Yeah. Please do your investigative due diligence. This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Go beyond reality with new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea and discover a berry delicious world bursting with unexpected blackberry flavor. A world so full of refreshing blackberry iced tea that you may never want to leave. But there's always time to linger. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Bye, Jody. We're going to move on to Potomac with Callie Curry. We're going to get into season 8, episode 2, Home Sweet Drama. Kind of a, a little bit of a in-betweener episode. Van is watching Potomac this season, and he even said that he saw the episode before me.
Of course he is.
He saw it before me, and he was like, not a great episode. And I was like, okay, Van, you just joined. And then I watched it, and I was like, okay, he's kind of right. It's kind of all right. Not amazing. Not my favorite.
The buildup of the episode from what we saw in the previews, I thought it was going to be them confront all the other people confronting Robin. And we didn't get that.
Is it my imagination or we just started with Ashley and her mom? We just started. Yeah. Like we didn't even pick up from that. Like we left it and closed that chapter, moved on to the next one. And I guess because I watched it again this morning, like, did I miss that? How was this not a TBD? Very interesting. It seems like
I don't know.
That seems like a production call where they obviously that was probably a very long conversation, but they just cut it for whatever reason. Maybe they weren't getting anywhere because Robin is like, this is my story. This is Juan's story. We're not going to say anything different. And I feel like, you know what? If that's the case, then let's move on. I agree.
We did get the conversation again of her and Juan talking about what the girl said. And Juan's big thing is, I don't care. And I want to be like, yes, Juan, that's the problem. You don't care. You don't care about Robin. You don't care about what it makes her feel. You don't care about what it makes her look like. You don't care about anything but yourself.
Yeah.
It's very obvious.
Yeah, it actually really is. And it's actually, I felt when I was watching that conversation. So yeah, we don't pick up with the ladies, but we do. Next time we find Robin, she's in a kitchen talking with Juan again. And that conversation definitely felt to me like they practiced it before. It's like at night, I felt like there were no cameras. And she probably was like, listen, I had this intervention with the women. Let me tell you what happened. We'll have to talk about it tomorrow. That's what it was giving me because there's something she says where she was like, and the women were confronting me. And Juan goes, she goes, it felt like an intervention. And Juan goes, what? And it just didn't seem like that was the first time he heard it. I don't know. I feel like they did this song and dance the night before.
It might not be the first time he's heard it because it's probably not Robin's first intervention from people telling her to do something with Juan.
It's probably her fifth
intervention this year. I constantly think, like, what? Because we see Robin's parents on this show sometimes. What do her parents think?
I think her parents supportive. If her parents are old school, like, you know how like old school, and I can only speak for Black.
Yeah.
Like they're like, you're supposed to be together. You're not supposed to divorce, especially if they're religious too. You're not supposed to divorce. You have kids together, you know? So they probably just support the union again and don't get involved in anything else.
Do you think that Robin thinks that way?
Yes. I think Robin, they've been together since high school, college. I think high school. I would imagine that this is like been the only guy that she's been with, definitely the first. And
ever?
I mean,
they were divorced for a long time.
How was it that long? Okay, maybe not ever, but her first. We'll just say her first. First love, for sure. First love. So, and they have two kids together, and they have a lot of history, and I'm almost positive they went to high school together. So, Yeah, I think Robin wants this as well. And to the point where she got married again. So this time, and I said this last week, like, she's in it. So this is her story. So I'm kind of like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. They're not going to change.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just going around in this hamster wheel. We've got to move on from the Juan and Robin of it. We might have thought in season 8 that we were going to get something new. We're not. Let's move on. They do mention the lawsuit, which they call an unfortunate lawsuit. And Robin says, and I quote, "Knowing what I know, Juan not only did nothing wrong, he did everything right." I should note, I looked this up, he has been dropped from that lawsuit.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah. He's still fired, but he's been dropped. But he's fired because
I think
they
had to,
3 times a losing record over their winning record.
No, yes, for sure. That. But also, I do think that if all of this is happening in your house and you're completely unaware and you have a losing record, like, I feel like you have to be fired in that situation. You have to have a better hold on what's happening.
But the other guy who was named
under you,
the other guy who was named is still there. There was another coach that was named. I don't know if he was assistant or head. And maybe because he wasn't the head coach, I don't know. But he's still there.
Yeah.
But Juan is done. He seems to not be fazed by it in the way that we were. And it's just like he wants the truth to come out, which now he's been dropped from the lawsuit.
I have to imagine, even though, like, obviously Juan wasn't the guy doing it, but I have to imagine it's going to be hard for him to get another job.
Yeah. I mean, the losing record, it was like, his record was like 50-something to 130. 50 wins, 130 losses.
Yeah, but I feel like the combination of it all just isn't great. And I'm glad he was dropped from the suit, because that just means hopefully that he doesn't have like a lot of culpability, which is awesome for us to hear because we're watching him. But just the narrative of it all, like, it would be really hard for parents to trust him with their kids again.
And I think, also, I don't think a basketball program wants these cameras around. They don't want that attention.
Oh, that's true.
The housewives'
that's
attention.
We talked about that with Wendy. Like, I'm always shocked that they're cool with Wendy being on the show.
Well, who's cool? Oh, work. Well, I don't know if she still works with them or not, but let's talk about that, because now she's launching her own talk show, which...
Every season, Wendy, you can't have something new. Every season
she's
cannot
trolling
be something
us.
New.
She's got to be trolling us at this point.
Also, a talk show? I'm like, where did... What?
It's... I just... Who asked for this? First off...
No one.
It is
no one.
Tough.
Also, I mean, we see people like Kelly Clarkson struggling with a talk show. You, Wendy, think that you're going to have a talk show and a talk show with zero focus? She's like, we're going to talk about important things and non-important things. And I'm like, oh, so you're going to talk about everything. Is that what you're saying?
It's like, so true. It's...
And then her being like, we're already over budget. And the lady being like, well, that's not a lot of budget.
And then she's like, "This, do you have a PA? And she's like, yes. And then she's like, what's a PA? I was like, oh, Wendy. Like, I guess I'm just sick of the narrative. And
also,
we saw this with Seth and Meredith with their podcast. Like, oh, I have a platform. This is nothing for me to do. That's the problem with, and I say this as a person who speaks podcasts for a living. So you feel free to like come at me for this. But just because you have a platform doesn't mean everybody wants to hear what you have to say. It doesn't mean you should pick up a microphone and start filming yourself or whatever. Like, that's, everybody has their own platform now and thinks that it's just so easy to do. And it's not.
No, it's not easy to do. But also, you know what makes it easier is actually having a point of view, actually having something to talk about, like actually having a focus makes it a lot easier, because then you can get people that are interested in whatever topic you're focused on. Your podcast is focused on. Just saying, we're going to talk about everything. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And it is, you know what? Produce it. Cause I want to see it. I want to see what this looks like.
I don't.
I do.
But if you don't even know what a PA is.
But just say that.
But also we're not even at step one. If you don't have a PA, we're not on step one.
The problem is she didn't know. It's not that she didn't have a PA or didn't know. It's that she lied about knowing. It's like, you gotta say what you don't know. You're entering a world that you have no experience. Just because you logged on to Zoom and contributed a few times on MSNBC does not now make you an expert in starting a whole show. And it's hard to do a talk show by yourself. Like, a co-host is a lot easier, but it's hard. Just look at the talk shows that are on now, as you pointed out, to like be able to hold your own, especially if you don't have guests. People work for years to do that. So we meet. Ashley has her housewarming. We don't get a lot of Candace this episode. Candace is not invited. She's off in LA doing something. The rest of the ladies come. We meet NECA. Am I saying that right? I have a friend named NECA. I have a friend named NECA, and we definitely are like NECA. It didn't sound any different to me.
I couldn't tell the difference. She was like, "Oh, you're letting him say your name wrong," and I was like, "What's the difference, NECA or NECA?"
Yeah, NECA.
By the way, I would like to know what the difference is. So if you guys know what the difference is, please let me know. I just could not tell the difference between what Wendy was saying and what NECA was saying.
Yeah, I think it's just holding the N longer. But again, one of my very closest friends is named NECA, and she has never corrected the way that we say it. So we meet her. She is rich, checking off all the boxes of being a quintessential housewife, it seems. She lives in Potomac. Let's just start there, because not most of the women do. She's, you know, like, comes from family money. She's got a great job, career. So does her husband. They're trying to have kids. They're showing off their properties. They're international with their properties. She thinks, she can't remember if they have any in Africa or not. But so far, I'm liking it. She's already coming in with a little drama because she knows Wendy. She's talking about this whole Osu thing, which I had never heard of. Yoruba, Igbo, I know that, but I've never heard of Osu. And they try to explain it to us. I still don't understand, but it's not a good thing. That's all I know. It's not a good thing. So we know that there's probably going to be some beef between NECA and Wendy, but right now everything seems copacetic.
I took Yoruba. Or Yoruba. I think we called it Yoruba, but Yoruba
a lot of
in college.
People did. A lot of athletes did.
Yeah. Well, it tracks. Took it for 2 years.
Do you remember anything?
No, I always get it confused with Latin because I took Latin in high school. Ogbeni. I remember that. Ogbeni is teacher.
All the football players took Yoruba at Texas.
It was literally all athletes in my class. And my Yoruba teacher was like, if you give me your cell phone when you walk into the class, I'll pass you. I was like, all right. Give me my cell phone.
Nice to know it's consistent amongst all the D1 schools.
But I had never heard of Osu. So, and the flashback of their conversation, Ashley, which I am an Ashley apologist. I like her. I think she's good for the show. Ashley, baby, you relayed that conversation so differently than how it happened.
I know.
But even though NECA didn't say it like that, I do think that she thinks all those things because NECA was coming with, she had like a little bit of energy towards Wendy.
I will agree. And there's definitely something there and I can't wait for it. Or we've seen those rumors. Like, we know that they don't get along quite the way that you would think they would as these two African sisters coming together. I don't know if I said this, but when I was doing the Potomac reunion and I was like greeting the ladies as they were coming on stage, NECA hugged me and goes, "So nice to meet you, my Nigerian sister." And I thought, okay. I'll be Nigerian today.
I was like, are you Nigerian?
I've never done a 23andMe test. Maybe
but
I am.
You're not Nigerian. No.
To my knowledge, I have no
not that
idea.
I never thought you were, but when you just said she said that, I was like, does she know something I don't know?
Same. I was like, maybe there's something with my facial features that reminded her of home? I don't know. I was like, okay, I'll be Nigerian on this panel for the next hour. That's fine. It was just so odd.
But that's not normal.
swear to God, I was so caught off guard. I was like, huh, maybe she thinks I'm somebody else. I don't know.
Oh, that's
but,
true.
You know, for maybe. 1 hour, I was her Nigerian sister.
Well, it is very sweet of her to come up and hug you like that. So you would think she would have that same energy for Wendy, her actual Nigerian sister.
It'll be interesting to see who she... I want to see who turns first. Well, it's going to be Wendy because of the way Ashley relayed this conversation to her.
Well, in previews, it does look like she's saying Wendy's mom's a witch, which is not a good start on.
Didn't we hear that before? Maybe not on the show, but in the blogs, there was something about like the Eddie's family remember Eddie's family didn't like Wendy's family because there was some type of like,
oh yeah, they don't like when like their families don't speak.
But it has to
and
do with
Wendy,
something
Wendy
along
doesn't
that.
Speak to all of Eddie's family, but I don't know.
When that came out with like whatever NECA is tied to that, I was like, oh, we heard this with Eddie's family. Eddie's family said something like this.
Said the
allegedly,
same thing.
Allegedly. That was like in the blogs. Well, obviously this is a setup episode. It's going to, you know, take us to the next one. I don't even remember what the previews were for the next episode. Do you?
The previews were about her saying that her mom was a witch.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's why I'm like, I'm pretty sure NECA's going to go first.
Well, NECA's coming in hot and we are here for it. That's pretty much it on this episode. Again, I feel like we were catching up with each one of the ladies and seeing where they are in their lives. You can clearly see the division in the group. I mean, when Wendy walked into the room at Candace's house, she was like, I'm done with the shits. I'm not even going to pretend like I'm trying to be cool with Giselle or I'm cool with Mia.
Ashley's house.
Ashley's house, yes. She's like, I'm not even trying to pretend like I'm cool with them. And so the ladies are split. Candace didn't show up. Candace wasn't invited. It's not she didn't show up. She wasn't even invited. So it's going to be interesting.
But still doing their job.
All right, you guys, that is it for us on this episode. We gave you a jam-packed episode, but next week, next Friday, this Morally Corrupt show will not be here because of the holidays. We do hope you guys have a beautiful Thanksgiving, but we're not going to leave you empty-handed because, as I said at the top of this episode, we have split Morally Corrupt because there's so much Bravo content. So on Tuesday, we still will be dropping an episode with Chelsea and Zach, Southern Charm, Real Housewives of Miami. You guys, don't stop watching Bravo the rest of the week. If there's something on, watch it because we will pick up right where we left off. Not next Friday, but the Friday after that. So you guys, once again, have a happy holiday. Take care. Be safe. See you guys soon.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.